We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started. Hello, everyone. Stay tuned to the end of the interview, where, as usual, I'll give you some actionable insights that I learned from my guest. These insights are also in the show notes. All of the show notes are over at theentrepreneurethos.com. As always, thanks for listening. Now, on to my guests for today, George Boutsalis, co-founder of the new app for social voting called Cast. George comes from a family of successful entrepreneurs in Toronto, and from a young age, he engaged in the typical entrepreneur activities, shoveling snow, lemonade stands, and selling his younger siblings' toys. I love that one. After graduating from college, he went to work in the family business, a commercial cleaning company, starting as a custodian and working his way up with the aim of someday running it. While he liked the work in 2017, he began to wonder if there wasn't something else for him. He set out on what turned out to be a 13-month sabbatical, traveling the world. George shares that he became a more self-aware, empathetic person in the process, traits that serve him well as a leader. George returned to his work managing the cleaning business, but he also started thinking about the problem of social media and the difficulty of sharing honest opinions and engaging in a civil discourse. While he was texting, he texted his idea to a friend who would become his co-founder. Over the years, they evolved his initial idea, and then when COVID hit, causing a slowdown in the commercial cleaning business, George found an opportunity to develop his idea. Cast emerged as a result of what George now focuses on. Cast is an app that gives people the opportunity to vote anonymously, which George believes will give people a more honest perspective on what people are really thinking and feeling, creating a better starting point for discussion and arguments that the current social media just doesn't have. Even though he's less financially secure now, George says he feels freer and is the happiest he's ever been. Now, let's get better together. George Boutsalis, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. You are actually the founder of a company called Cast, and it's a social voting app, which is pretty interesting idea. I know there's been lots of these sort of things in the past, but I'm super interested in figuring out how you guys, your take on it. You also mentioned before we started recording that you actually had your own podcast and, you know, trying that all out and, you know, how to be a good host and a good guest and all that sort of stuff, which I've written about before and always love to hear other people's takes on that. But before we dig into that, dive in, as I like to say, why don't you tell us how you got to do what you're doing today?
I'm going to do my best to keep it concise because, you know, being a podcast host, I know the job is to listen to the conversation. So I've done that. Being the guest, I typically can get carried away in talking because I'm not one to be in the hot seat usually. So I'll do my best to keep the story as concise and linear as possible. But I grew up my whole life as a lifetime entrepreneur, which I kind of, inherited or learned from my father. He started a commercial cleaning company 40 years ago, just cleaning office buildings and whatnot. And it's grown to be quite a large presence in the Canadian market right now. And growing up, seeing him do what he did, I always wanted to be, a quote unquote boss, a leader, an entrepreneur, just someone who did their kind of blaze their own trail. It's been in my blood for a long time, but I also had this burning desire to kind of follow in his footsteps and take over the family business. So I did a lot of my life, started with my little entrepreneur side hustles, lemonade stands as a kid, and shoveling driveways up in the Great White North, door to door, little selling trinkets and all that stuff. Little funny story, I actually once started a garage sale, but I didn't sell my own stuff. I stole my siblings' toys and sold it.
Are you an older brother?
I am the oldest of
three. I knew it. I'm oldest too. I don't think I ever did that, but I used to pull all sorts of, tricks are probably not the right word. I'd say, why don't you go down to the store and buy me some candy? And then the money you have left over, you could buy something for yourself, right? Well, there was never any left over because that was that kind of a jerky kid. But of course, I gave him something after, but it was a good lesson. Good lesson.
Absolutely. And that's what I was actually going to like you say, I learned from that. I want, obviously they don't want you to, you are the people to think that I'm some kind of like unethical, sneaky businessman today, because you learn your lessons and you can't do that kind of stuff. But when I was young, I thought, I can knock door to door and make money off my own time and labor, or I could take other people's time, labor, and products, if you will, and make money off of them, which at the time, not realizing how that's, frankly, that would be illegal to do today, stealing stuff and selling it. But it seemed like a good idea at the time on how to, compound the growth and the returns of my time. So learned the hard way. My parents obviously didn't like that, and my siblings. So we split the profits. But I've always had this passion to tell stories, build brands and companies and ideas and just that sort of stuff. It's always been a passion of mine, even just reading about the, startups and the business world, the markets, all that stuff. It's just always been a hobby. So anyways, to fast forward, I went into the family business from a young age, started as a janitor, worked my way up until about 2017. So I graduated in 2012. So about 2017, I was working for the family business, and the kind of natural progression was next step, move from a vice president role to kind of slowly taking over from my father, myself and my siblings. But my kind of path was to kind of take on that leadership role. And I hit this like crossroads. I just wasn't sure if that's what I wanted to do the rest of my life. And I had this kind of, the weight of the world felt like it was coming in on me. And I said, do I want to be in the cleaning space? Do I want to try my own thing before I, commit to this? And just kind of face this like existential question of like, what do I want to be for the rest of my life? And I thought I knew everything, and that's what I wanted to do up until that point. And in 2017, I hit this like roadblock, and I said, I think I need some space to clear my head and really just figure out who I am, who I want to be as a person, who I want to be as an entrepreneur, and so forth. So I actually took a sabbatical. I left my at the time I was I was a director at the company, and I stepped aside, took 13 months off, and as a sabbatical, and traveled the world, backpacked across, I think I did something like 41 countries, give or take. Wow. And that's that kind of opened up my eyes to a lot of things, which I won't get to yet, but it taught me about who I am, who I wanted to be, just helped me really become a lot more self-aware and self-reflect. And then came back, was happy doing what I was doing. But over the time of like my travels and coming back, I started to kind of have this little inkling of an idea that I was getting a bit frustrated with the social media landscape and kind of the narratives painted by social media and the news. And, everything seemed to be very subjective, or, you saw one side of a narrative, whether it's the side you were going to be most agreeable or most disagreeable to, whatever it was, you never really saw a full, honest, objective picture. That's kind of where the frustration started. So I came back to work, was loving what I was doing, working my way up the family company ladder, if you will, getting ready to take over. But then the pandemic hit, and being in the commercial cleaning company that cleans offices when people are not working from offices, naturally, there's a bit of a downturn.
A bit.
We weathered the storm, but we slowed down. So we had to pivot and realign some things, but I had a little bit more time on my hands. And I said, you know, I'm working from home. I could kind of manage the day-to-day of the company. Why don't I try and, you know, go back to this idea I had about social media? I mean, I don't know if you tell and you or anybody what's been going on in the world, whether it's big tech or whatever it is, politics, you name it, everyone seems to be a lot of polarization online. So I thought, you know, what's the worst that happens? Why don't we try and fix some of these problems? Why don't we try and build a platform that is more objective, transparent, and honest? And the long way around the boat of answering your question of how I got here, we decided to kind of dive in and take a stab at this passion project that has now turned into a full-fledged startup, you know, with a team up to about 10 employees now, scaling and raising capital, and just trying to, again, build something that brings more honesty, objectivity, transparency to the social media landscape.
Wow. Wow. That's what a great origin story.
Yeah.
And that sabbatical thing is super interesting. I have a friend, DJ, who is, I think he likes to coin himself the sabbatical guy.
Okay.
He's writing a book. He's got all these kind of programs. He's trying to build up I don't know if it's like the legitimacy of a sabbatical or just like bring it to light that a sabbatical is a good idea and that everyone should have access to a sabbatical. You know, because it's such a powerful tool for human development.
I agree.
I'm curious, like, I mean, 13 month sabbatical, that's, you know, pretty, that's a long time, but I mean, I'm just curious, what was some of the insights that you had from that? Because, you know, a lot of times entrepreneurs, especially young entrepreneurs or any kind of entrepreneur, like we're always go, 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 go. Like, oh my gosh, if I'm not getting ahead, I'm falling behind. And how can I can't even take a weekend off. And yet, you know, you said I'm taking 13 months off.
Absolutely.
What'd you learn from that?
So in a nutshell, I think this is kind of subjective, but learned how to kind of be a better person, a better leader, be more kind to myself and the people around me. You know, I was to back up a little bit, obviously I had a luxury that maybe not everyone might get. And, you know, your buddy DJ, I will buy that book anytime and I support it. I think more people should take sabbaticals. Obviously working for my family, I didn't run the risk of getting fired. Despite being fired in the past, we can get to that another time, but I didn't, you know, I had the benefit that, you know, they let me kind of step away. It wasn't supposed to be 13 months. It just spiraled out to 13 months and I took advantage of it. It should have been maybe closer to 7-8, let's say, but I had the opportunity. But anyway, sorry, not to ramble and jump all over, but I guess in essence, what it helped teach me, it helped me mature. It helped me build confidence and it just taught me how to be a little bit more empathetic and try to be more like, try to put yourself in people's shoes more often than just assuming, you know everything and understand everybody. Like really step outside of a situation, try to be impartial and unbiased. And just more patient, I guess. So I guess patience, confidence, and a little bit of understanding and I guess empathy, for lack of a better term, it kind of taught me those things, all at different levels and different points, but. And obviously those are things that are very important, I think, for any leader to have. Because before I had left on that trip, one of the things I said was at a crossroads, I think I was starting to realize the difference between what a leader is and what a quote unquote boss is. And I think I wasn't being as empathetic as I could be and didn't realize like, you know, being a good leader is someone who listens. I was a little bit younger. So I thought, you know, I know everything. I don't have to listen to anybody. Mm-hmm. And you realize that that's not the case. It doesn't get you very far. So, you know, being able to see that those signs and those kind of red flags in myself kind of brewing, I said, okay, I got to stop this and try and identify where I can improve and grow as a human. And that's kind of what that sabbatical taught me. Being alone for the majority of 13 months in foreign lands where you don't speak the language or know anybody, you just have a lot of time to sit with your own thoughts. And being alone with your thoughts helps you realize some of the things you like about yourself, things you dislike, who you are, what you want to be. So in a nutshell, that's kind of what it taught me. And help me grow as a person and get to where I am today. I mean, obviously you made the point earlier, I think you said it off air, like, you know, we try our best. We know the things we need to be and need to do. And, you know, we're aware of them, but it, you know, you still have to practice it every day and remind yourself, hey, you got to do this and do that. But the self-awareness, I think, has improved from that process of just being able to be cognizant of these things and you know, what a good leader should, or what I think a good leader should be.
Wow. Wow. What was your favorite country that you visited?
So it's a tough one. The biased answer, I'm Greek. I'm a Greek Canadian. So Greece will always be the best, in my opinion, the best place in the world. maybe not from their financial economics and their monetary policy, but in terms of vacation, I think that I have never seen a better beach than I've seen in Greece. That's I'll say that on the record, but
yeah, my friend Nick Dias will say the same thing. He's Greek American. He's he's like Greek and Greek. He's from New York, so it's a whole story.
a lot of Greeks out there. I have there, but beautiful. It's my favorite. But if I had to pick one that I enjoyed the most, it's a toss up. I would say probably Japan or maybe India. India was where I had a really, really cool, I was there by myself for a month backpacking, and I was there during Holi. Two different experiences. My family and my best friend and his family came to meet me in Japan, which was over my birthday. So that was really cool. My brother as well. So like I had the people really close to me there, and Japan is like a different world compared to, you know, Toronto and, you know, New York, like mega cities. It's just on another level. Yeah. And then India is like the polar opposite of where I'm from. So seeing that disparity, seeing it's just such a different, both different places for different reasons, and really opens your eyes to how much bigger the world is. Like how, you know, we all think we're significant in our bubble, in our lives, but you really realize how much more is going on in the world, how much people are, how different cultures are, how much people are suffering in different places, how much they're succeeding in different places. You know, you start to get a bigger sense of what is going on in the world. And it was really eye-opening. So for different reasons, but love both places.
What part of India did you go to?
I started in Mumbai. I was in Mumbai. I went down to Goa for about a week. I took the train down, which was pretty cool. And then went up to Agra and Delhi, saw the Taj Mahal, obviously. Went across to Jaipur, where I was there for a week for Holi. Had a pretty cool experience there. Just through a connection someone I met in Tanzania, of all places, had a friend in Jaipur. He said, you should go hang out with them. They're good people. They throw this big Holi party. So I said, sure. What's the worst that could happen? And, turns out it was family of the royal family. So I got to celebrate Holi inside the palace there. Really, really crazy. Like just said yes to some guy and then ended up there. So that was kind of like the end of India. Got the experience Holi, which was a big bucket list thing for me. Met some really interesting people, some really cool people. And then after there, flew out to Sri Lanka. But Jaipur, I think Jaipur and Goa were my favorite kind of cities or areas in India.
Yeah. When I was in the semiconductor business, I had a team in Bangalore, and I had to go out to Bangalore and visit them. And, you know, you mentioned about the disparity. I mean, this was 20 years ago. So, I mean, India was a growing economy. It still had its challenges, but I remember in Bangalore, you know, I was up in this hotel, and it's like, I don't know, second nicest hotel in Bangalore. It's this like kind of colonial style kind of thing, you know, had an Irish pub in it and these beautiful, like you know, when you went to India, especially for business, you had a driver because there's no way you're going to drive in India. Like it is insane. Right. So they're like, you have a driver, here's your driver. And you know, you'd walk into this hotel and they like salute you and stuff. And you're like, what, you know? So it's like the colonial kind of vibe. But I remember, you know, like I would go running around the neighborhood, which I'm like, I guess in hindsight was probably not a good idea, but what did I know? I was younger. And I remember, running past these lean-tos, and then the sewer there is even in a city is sort of open. And then there was a golf course. So I'd be running around the golf course and trying to, you know, dodge in and out of traffic. And I mean, I do it early in the morning and people just look at me like, who is this idiot? But I get to feel like this is what Bangalore, like the people, like this is what it's like. I remember even looking outside my window in my, you know, 4-star hotel, and there was a empty lot next to it, and literally not even 50 feet away is someone living in this lean-to when there was a cow. Like, cows are sacred in India, so they had their cow. Anytime you'd walk down the street, you let the cow pass. Like, they're holy animals. And so he's tending his cow, but he's living in squalor, and I'm literally 50 feet away from him in a 4-star hotel. And I'm just like, wow, that's pretty, you know, we think we have it bad here in the US and cities and stuff. And then you go see something like that. You know, we also went to Mysore, which was a really cool, like, palace. Mysore was a couple hours, I think, north of Bangalore, and this beautiful palace. But then you have people in, I mean, poverty that you can't even imagine. Mm-hmm. That's how bad it was. So,
And it's interesting too, like that, you know, I've been fortunate to travel even from a young age. You know, like, my parents have always liked to travel. We used to go to, you know, do Greece in the summers, and there's places even in Europe, you know, you might see, you know, gypsies, if you will, or look, mm-hmm. like, you know, like little slum areas, but nothing like, you know, somewhere like India or even Africa. Like, before I was in India, I spent some time with my family. We did like a trip to South Africa and Tanzania and some other parts there. And it really does open your eyes. You can see it on TV. You can hear, you know, you always hear the stories about how in India they have, you know, the biggest tower in the world, the most expensive home in the world. And then you have the biggest slum in the world next to it. And you see these things, but you don't really put them into perspective of like what it's like. And, you know, I think the biggest thing one of the biggest things that I learned is, like, well, I guess twofold, like, your problems seem very insignificant. You know, when you're in, you know, I'm in Toronto, and, you know, I'm late to a meeting or a dinner or my phone breaks, whatever it is, it seems so trivial when you see what people are going through there, and, you know, the conditions they live in, where they live, how much they have, and so forth. And it makes you really appreciate what you have. It makes you realize how little you actually need to be happy. And the more, you know, the more you need to be happy, the probably less happy you in fact are, I would suspect, because I met some of the happiest people, or at least seem to be the happiest people in these places.
No, I've had that experience with some of the clients, my professional athletes. They've got all this money, but they're lonely because they've got all this money. You know, it's a double-edged sword, right? Like, I don't know quite how to put it. There's a certain amount of freedom when you have nothing, but once you start to accumulate things, your freedom diminishes, and it takes a lot of effort to not make it diminish. And I think like entrepreneurs chasing the unicorn or doing all these sort of things, like, careful what you wish for. I mean, it's great to be successful, but as you kind of go up in the success hierarchy, your freedom diminishes. I mean, I'm curious if you felt that as you started to ascend in your family business, because the more responsibility you have for people and the business or whatever, the less freedom you have to sort of do what you want to do.
Yeah, that's perfectly put. Like, I thought, that's another thing, from a young age, I thought, you know, being a boss or a leader is going to mean you make a lot of money, have nice cars and do nice things. And as I got older, I realized, oh wow, like, I'm making more money, but I'm not any happier. If anything, I'm actually a little bit more unhappy, because I'm, you know, you want to keep up with the Joneses, and you see your buddies going here for dinner, so you got to go there for dinner. And you see your friends going on this trip, so you got to go on that trip. And it's, whether you do it intentionally or not, like, you're having fun, but you think that it's fleeting, right? Cause you're chasing these, like, moments and these highs, and they disappear. You know, experiences, even though they're fun to have, and, you know, I believe people should spend on experiences, shouldn't define you, because, you know, you might, again, look at the pandemic. Everything shut down for 2 years, and no one could travel, no one could go anywhere. So if you rely on all those for happiness, like, they can be taken from you in an instant. And to go back, like, yeah, climbing the family ladder, have more responsibility. Sure, you have more money, a little bit more time to less time dealing with small problems, but then you have to be at everyone's beck and call. You know, you're the one that gets called in the middle of the night if there's a crisis. You got to entertain people and keep the business growing and drive sales and hit quotas and all that stuff. So it weighs on you. It's like, well, is all of this worth this? Because I can tell you now, I'm in the polar opposite situation where, sure, my title is CEO of Cast. I'm one of the co-founders. But I can tell you, I am probably financially the maybe least secure, is a good way to put it, that I've ever been. Like, we're not, you know, we're still in the pros, like we're in the seed stage, so raising capital, but we're not taking big salaries. We actually bootstrapped it in the beginning. So we put our own capital in. So I've probably had the least maybe financial security I've ever had, and the least I don't know what you say, like powerful position or influence kind of thing. And I feel the most free I've ever felt. Like I'm doing what I love. Yeah. I'm making the least money I've made probably since university, which is kind of scary when you have a mortgage and all that stuff. But I'm doing what I love. So to me, the rest doesn't matter. It's like I'm actually enjoying every single day. I'm not, you know, even though I'm at the mercy of our users and our team, and you know, you have to lead especially with a social product that's in the consumer space that has eyeballs on it all day. Like we see the social space, what's happening now. So, you know, that's a little bit daunting, but we're building a great product that people love. And I work with people that I love working with. So, the money doesn't, I don't even have it to have it impact anything. Like, I'm just doing what I love. And that's making me the happiest that I've ever been. So, take it from me as somebody who was making it. And now is, you know, in the opposite position, like grinding it out, eating ramen on a daily basis. It's the most fun I've ever had. And I'm actually probably the happiest I've been in a long time.
Yeah. Well, I think it's because you've got this mission and this high, you know, this really strong why. And again, you know, I'm not saying that making money isn't a good thing. And I'm not saying that, you know, that shouldn't be something, but I love how you put the priority of your life and how much you really need to be happy and what makes you happy is not this fame, fortune, and prestige, this, you know, external trappings of success. It's the connection, the relationships, the experience, the people you work with, the mission you're on. Like, I felt this way a lot as well. I mean, when, you know, I talk about her all the time, but when Jane died, my wife, my late wife, you know, I was at a crossroads too. And it's funny because the world gets so crystal clear when you literally just have like a traumatic life event, which I hope, you know, probably people listening, of course, eventually you're going to lose someone you love and they're going to die and you're going to be sad. But like there's a monumental moment, these monumental moments in life where you just sort of like, you can take the fork in the road, right? Which is the only way I can put it. You can either go down path A or path B. And the insights from that experience sound, you know, similar to when you travel, because you know, when you travel, you can see a photo of a slum, but when you smell when you smell a slum, you like, okay, I know, like you never forget the smell. Like in India, I just could never forget the smell of India, the wetness, the stickiness, the just like, it was all immersive, and there's no photo on the planet that could capture that. And being there and talking to the feeling, the energy of the people. And again, I think this is the reason a lot of times, you know, people say, you know, get out of the office, get out of the building. Like the answer is not in the building. It's out there with customers and interacting and trying to, you know, all entrepreneurs like obviously have to do this because trying to get your product off the ground, you know, you're in your own little bubble. It's myopic. You don't know what you don't know. You got to talk to people and interact and all that sort of stuff. And so I'm curious, with Cast, it's a you know your tagline is social media meets social voting. I'm just curious how this works, because it seems to me, you know, given what we've talked about, that really, and you don't have to, you know, go a huge step to see how broken social media is. I mean, it's broken. Like, clearly we're living in little bubbles and stuff. I mean, how are you going about, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but almost like your travel, your sabbatical experience, it sounds like your sabbatical experience is kind of really driving this sort of how we're going to do social media better. I'm just, tell me a little bit about that.
That's fair. Well, to the point, like I said earlier, the idea kind of sprouted while I was away. I actually have a text message I sent to my now co-founder and best friend, Ricky. I had messaged him. And he teases me. He's like, you're the guy with a million ideas and you never act on them. If you had acted on all of them, you'd be a billionaire 10 times over by now. But this idea is, I woke up, I think I was in like Bangkok or something. And I said, hey, what do you think about an idea that just like tries to be more factual around public opinion and kind of be like, maybe it's a prediction game where we see what people think about future events and how it's going to play out. That was kind of the early impetus, or the early like inkling of it. And it started to evolve because, you know, we started talking that this won't work and this won't make sense in this reason. So it evolved and evolved, and we kept talking it out, and we realized, well, what the world needs is a platform that lets, it's twofold. It gives you an honest and instant snapshot of public opinion, and okay, well, that's easier said than done, because how do you get people to be honest? Because it's very hard to be honest today. Like a lot of people are, whether they virtue signal or they tell you what you want to hear, or they don't tell you anything at all because they're fearful, they have anxiety, or there's the social pressures, or they worry what their employer will think. They're worried about getting canceled or whatever it is. People are refraining from sharing. So it's harder to get honest and instant opinions and a true snapshot. So that all in mind, we said, okay, how do we solve this? And you know, why do we need to solve this? And again, you brought the point up about social media is causing bubbles today. And I'm of the belief, after seeing my experience traveling and seeing like everyone is so different, never mind being from different parts of the world, but just how you've been raised, your cultural differences, your ethnic differences, your religious differences, like everyone is different. We're not, like, it's not a secret. No two people, like very, I mean, if there's two people the same, I'd love to meet them, but everyone has unique experience that shaped them.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean that one opinion is more important than the other, is more valuable, is more correct. Opinions are opinions, and we can believe what we want because we see an incident, we take our beliefs and our first principles, and we formulate our opinion and we give it. And that's part of the, you know, public conscience, public opinion, and so forth. So I said, this is cool. Like I'm learning different ideas and different ways of life and how different people look at different events and what things mean in different cultures. So I said, okay, like, you know, public opinion needs to be more diverse and be more transparent and let people think for themselves, not say, you know, Fox thinks this and Al Jazeera thinks this and CBC thinks this. Like, just give us a snapshot. Social media has billions of people on it. How can we not aggregate it, public opinion in a more honest, transparent, objective way? I hope I didn't lose anyone on there. I was kind of throwing some words out.
That's okay,
but we said we want to, you know, create this platform that lets people just see instantly what everybody's saying. And then hopefully have some healthier discourse around it and just more fact, like more of looking at the same reality. So we built a social voting platform, kind of like social voting, social polling. It's kind of interchangeable, but basically a platform where you can ask questions, create polls and let people share their honest opinion online. How we do that and get those honest opinions is everybody votes anonymously. Now that doesn't mean the whole platform is anonymous. It's not like a Yik Yak or anything like that, but when you vote, your vote input goes in fully anonymously. So no one knows what you're voting on or how you voted, which then ensures that we're getting honest opinions to a degree, 99.9%. Somebody might put a fake vote for whatever reason to game the system, but we're almost certain between a pretty close margin of error that people are putting their honest opinions in. We then aggregate every single opinion. We don't show you, you know, hey, Jari's going to be more agreeable to this. Serve him this. It'll make him happy and give him some dopamine. Or serve him this because he's going to get more upset and he'll be more enraged, comment more, and so forth. We just say, here is what the world is saying. We're not going to tell you what to think or how to think. We're going to put it in front of you. You both like basketball. You might think LeBron's better. You might think Jordan's better. That's fine. This is what the whole world thinks. Hopefully you can have some debate around some facts and some the same reality, not these siloed subjective realities. So that was kind of what to solve it. I hope I didn't lose anyone. I kind of went off some tangents there, but that's kind of where it started and the idea of it, the foundation of it, the why. And yeah, it started from the sabbatical of seeing just people think differently and people have differing opinions. I don't necessarily agree with everything. I mean, I don't even agree with some of my best friends' opinions. I don't look at them lesser. I don't think their opinion matters less. We can, you know, we don't have to always agree, but their opinion is equally as valid as mine. It should be in the sphere of public opinion and it should contribute to it. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Interesting. Super interesting. Cause I think there's a lot of, I mean, this is can sometimes be a really tricky subject and very sticky because if you're right, the virtue signaling, the culture nowadays of trying to, I don't know what it is. We have this problem in the U.S. Like it's actually a huge problem because what tends to happen in social media, as you know, is that you get in your little silo, your little bubble, and then it amplifies inside your own little bubble, and you just get all pissed off and you think, oh, those liberals and oh, those conservatives and blah, 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 blah. You know, like you get a real, it's divisive because, you know, we as humans are more apt to respond to negativity and threat than we are to good news, right? I mean, that's the reason why the old saying, if it bleeds, it leads. It's just, yeah. I mean, it's almost like an order of magnitude different effect. Like, I don't know if anyone's ever quantified it, but it's clearly the fight, flight, freeze response, the threat response amplifies and dumps, you know, cortisol, the whole thing. Like, we're very tuned into that because of evolution. And yeah, it makes the world a worse place because, you know, I try to talk to as many different entrepreneurs as I can on this show. And some, you know, clearly different political aspirations than me, clearly all along the spectrum, right? And what's interesting is that what you find when you just sort of sit down and talk with them is that most people, you know, want to have a happy life with their family, provide for them, you know, be left alone generally, you know, like they want the world to be a better place for their kids, their friends and family. And most people are really super reasonable. I've never really interviewed anyone or that's an entrepreneur that doesn't have this sort of pragmatism of, well, we do what we can and this is, you know, how it goes. Like, it's the dogma, it seems, is a little bit less when you actually have to go out and create something, right? Like, what you're trying to do is you're trying to create a new platform to get people to use it. You can't like be narrowly focused because you really don't know what's going to work. So you have to have an open mind and you have to have the ability to be like, oh, well, this is interesting. What does this mean? You know, as opposed to what you mentioned about virtue signaling and all of the, both on the left and the right, traditionally here in the US, and I'm sure in Canada a little bit as well. Like, you can't put the dogma. I mean, it's almost borderline religious in some cases, some views. And you're like, this can't be, it's dogma. Like, get out of your own head. Like, there's things that work, there's things that don't work. We should have a dialogue in the public square where everyone's heard, like what you're trying to do. Let's see what people are thinking and then make up your own mind.
Yeah. You know, I agree 100%. And it's one of the things that I actually kind of were leading to it, and I missed the point. And it's interesting how, like, let me phrase this properly. You know, I can, as an entrepreneur, but as just a curious human being, I love hearing other perspectives. And, you know, like I said, I had a podcast previously and I'd give anybody a platform. Again, this is assuming, like, I'm not going to give someone who's a racist or a bigot.
Well, there's standards of decorum, right?
Exactly. And the worst part is today, like, you know, you have to even preface that. Because when we say, like, you know, free speech and free ideas and all that stuff, it's a shame that I have to say, well, yeah, not these things. It should be implied, but I just want to make sure it's clear today because you never know. But the most interesting thing is, like, again, I have my co-founders, three of us are so different in our political beliefs, in our principles and our ideologies, but we all have the same mission. We all believe that people should be able to see public opinion and so forth. Like, everything we're doing at Cast, we all believe in. But, you know, politically, one of my co-founders is like we're polar opposites, but he's very on the other side of the fence than I am. I don't think of him as less of a human. He has different interests, different needs, different beliefs than I do. Doesn't make him a worse person. So it's funny how today, like, we see a person in the street or online and they say something and we assume that that one thing defines their character, defines their who they are. But
good point.
The other thing to go back, that one of the biggest things that I failed to mention that the sabbatical taught me is the farther you get away from your home, the smaller the similarity needs to be with somebody for you to get along with them. And I guess I'll unpack that a little in case it's maybe someone hears that and it's unclear. If I'm in Toronto and I meet someone on the street, chances are they're Canadian, but I'm not going to look at them as being Canadian. I'll look at the guy and say, well, he's got long hair. He lives in this area. He looks maybe like an asshole. I'm not going to talk to him, but then I size him up from his looks. Now, if I'm across the world in say again, you know, in Jaipur, India, and I'm in a hostel and I meet a guy who's a Canadian, he's from Canada. nothing else will matter. The fact that he's Canadian,
that's true.
I'll say, oh, that's so cool. You're that's Canadian. True. And you have, and you start to build these similarities. But right. You see, here, I'm around 6 million Canadians in Toronto, and most of them, I'll probably look at them daily basis and not care. But you put me in a country of a billion people, and I meet one Canadian, he will become my best friend. and when you, once you realize
that, that's true,
and you act that way so far from home, what's the difference when you're at home or online? You know, like I'll be, you know, like more, I think that's one of the other things that people will learn by getting out of your comfort zone and away from your home is that we're all, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter where you're from, your skin color, your race, your religion, your ethnicity, anything, your sex, your gender. Like we're all humans on one earth, and we're all, you know, we all have mothers and fathers. We all believe certain things. Seeing what one person's opinion is on one matter doesn't define them. So why do we feel the need to like attack them based on one opinion?
Yeah.
You know,
agreed.
I have political beliefs, just not to stick to politics, to try to stay away from it, but I believe things on the left and the right. Like I see that they both do things equally well.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I say I like this thing on the left, someone says, oh, you're on the left. Well, no, like I also like this on the right. Well, then you're on the right. No, like you can hold conflicting beliefs and you can pick ideologies that you want to define yourself. Like, you know, we pick this thing and then you get painted as, with this brush and that's what you believe now. But you see, like, that's why with CAST, one of the things we do differently is we don't just show you the whole picture. So let's use the easy one of LeBron versus Jordan for a sports analogy. Let's use LeBron and Jordan. You know, people are kind of polarized here. Like a lot of the younger generations, like maybe 30 and under, have only known LeBron James playing. So they say LeBron is the greatest. The older ones say Jordan. We'll never know who's right and wrong. You can have your own opinions, but like, just it's okay to debate and have differing opinions. But then what we do at CAST to kind of paint that more objective picture and transparency is we break down that whole macro vote into micro demographic groups, not to typecast anybody, but to say, okay, I'm a male from Toronto. I think Jordan, and most people I know think Jordan. So in my bubble, Michael Jordan is the greatest. But then I see that maybe 90% of the world thinks LeBron. Okay, well, that's interesting. Who makes up the 90%? Is it more males to females? Is it, you know, the millions in Chicago that make up that there's the demographic and they're the homeowners?
Exactly.
Like, that's the other thing, right? We see these like big numbers online. People think this and think that. Well, can we break it down further and really see who thinks what and, you know, where I fall into this picture? And can I be more open-minded and see why this group thinks this? Can I talk to them in their language, so to speak? So,
Yeah,
it's really interesting how we paint people with these broad brushes and put them into these groups and think that that's what they are, who they are, and that's all we see.
Yeah,
we're trying to break it down further at CAST and show you that, you know, the world has these little niche pockets and bubbles, and everyone thinks differently. And you know, being more open minded of that is probably a good thing, good for your own growth, good for our discourse and society as a whole. So it's another one of the whys we're diving into.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I think it's also extremely condescending to just limit, you know, someone by one thing. Like, you know, if it's always the, like, you're either with us or against us mentality, which I am never a fan of, because I'm with you. You know, my fiance Minerva always says people are always something and you're always an and, right?
Yeah.
And you may have a different view of, let's say, homelessness as opposed to the economy, as taxes, or, you know, is LeBron better than Michael Jordan? I think Michael Jordan's better, by the way, but I'm 50, so, you know, because I'm older and I saw him play. But, you know, I'm just so fascinated by this because I see a lot of people trying to solve problems in the world. And my hypothesis or my belief is that entrepreneurs are the ones that are going to solve a lot of these problems, because an entrepreneur's job is to create something out of nothing to help society, to help their community. And when given the right framework, given the right opportunity, anyone can do this job and anyone can help their community. And when I mean community, it's like your local community or your world community or whatever. And it's only through our shared humanity and the way I like to say it is, finding you in someone else. Like, there's always something that's like, God, you're just like me, as opposed to you're different than me, or the color of your skin, or your political. I mean, like, there's so many like labels where I think it's extremely condescending to label people just one thing, because there are some people,
you just would quote unquote never know, or they may have, it's everything's nuanced. I mean, you can't just be like, okay, if you believe these five things, you're liberal. If you believe these five things, you're conservative. If you're not liberal, you're not conservative. You're not on our plane. You know, you pick a side. I'm like, I don't want to pick a side. I think some of the things both of them do are crazy and completely insane. And I don't have to go very far to like, this is not part of my ethos. Why would I agree? So yeah, the nuance is always lost. And I think we have definitely fallen down as a world society by labeling people and trying to, the public square is now more bullying than debate. Like I remember when I was a kid, there was a William F. Buckley, and there was another guy, and I don't remember his name. William F. Buckley was conservative, and the other guy was liberal. I think it was Kinsley. I don't remember his name, so no offense to him. But it was something called Crossfire, which was on public television, right? And I did not necessarily agree with any one of them, but I loved the discourse. It was just so interesting how these guys would like debate and like this and that, and then, you know, they'd go have dinner or talk about they were intellectuals in the true intellectual sense. None of this dogma, like if you don't believe this, you're evil and you need to be canceled. It was like, well, I think you're wrong. Here's why. And, you know, can I convince you? And there's actually a podcast. Oh, and I don't remember the name of it, where there's it's a woman and a man, and they're one's conservative and one's liberal, and they do a show like where they're talking about all this. I don't remember the name of it. I'll put it in the show notes, but it's so fascinating because they are just like really respectful for each other. And like, I'm going to break this down, you know, and you're like, wow, finally, you know, and I hope that's what casts will be, because when you're in your own echo chamber, you think everyone's the enemy, and chances are not everyone's the enemy. In fact, most people aren't the enemy. Most people are just like you. They just want to be left alone and they want their families to be happy. They want to be happy. They want to see the world a better place. We're not all evil. You know, we all just want to get along. So,
yeah, that's a good, that last thing you said there. And I actually had this conversation recently with my girlfriend, some of my friends, is that a lot of people, even amongst, it's becoming almost, you see it like in, you know, amongst like sometimes in friends, but mostly like, you know, when you're having a debate, it's people, a lot of people default to assume bad intent of people. They always, you know, it feels as if there's a lot of people, especially online, that default to, this person said this, so they're probably an asshole or a monster. It's not, hey, they're probably a nice person and they either said something they disagree with, or they said something that's not factual. They made a mistake, right? Like it's automatically, it's like trial by fire. You said something, you must believe this whole thing. You must be a terrible person. And it's so interesting. Like, and I think that's what fuels it more. And whether it's compounded by what we're served up in social media or what we see, and maybe it's always, humans have always been like this, but it feels like it's getting worse. And it seems like everyone is always default, is this person said this because they are this, or they believe this, or they're trying to, you know, push this agenda or whatever it is. Like, you know, when I see something, someone doesn't agree with it, I'm like, okay, maybe that's stupid, or maybe it's kind of, you know, he's offside or a little bit too hateful or angry, but maybe they're just having a bad day. Like if you just default to this person's bad, you're going to see red and you're going to want to attack, and it's going to make it worse, and vice versa. Like, why don't you just, like, if you take the approach of, oh, maybe they didn't know what they were saying, let me ask them. Let me see if they really believe this. Let me find out if, do they really think the world is this way? Or do they think that, you know, do they really believe this thing, or does this group really believe it? And be more inquisitive and try to pull some nuances out of it. As you said, you'll probably get to the bottom of it, and people are probably reasonable, rational, or maybe not rational, most people are, I think, irrational, but at least most people are reasonable. They'll sit and talk to you. And if they don't, then at least you gave the benefit of the doubt. You did your job to try and, you know, bring healthy discourse and bring people to see both sides. But yeah, maybe it's that people just, they default to think like, you know, again, you're not with us, you're against us. So anything you say means you're against us, and you don't give people the benefit of the doubt anymore. And maybe it's just like self-deprecating cycle. And so hopefully, to your point, we hope that CAST can help that by, again, just giving people the objective reality, at least that, you know, we hope everyone, we assume everyone's being truthful because there's no reason to lie behind the anonymous vote. We take the data, show it to you, paint this reality that everybody can see, whether you believe it or don't believe it. If you like basketball, you'll see the same stats and the same data. If you like politics, you're going to see the same thing. You're going to see all parties from both sides of the spectrum and in the middle voting on it. And we're not telling you that this is the way the world is because you like it or dislike it. This is what everybody's saying. And if you don't have to agree with it, but at least you're speaking the same language and you kind of have the nuances in front of you to kind of discuss and hopefully try to get to the bottom of things rather than, you know, thinking everyone's terrible, or everyone's against us kind of thing.
Well, George, that's a great place to end it. I really appreciate your time and the honest discussion and your experience with sabbaticals. Good luck with CAST and definitely stay safe and keep in touch.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe. I really appreciate the time. And yeah, great, really great conversation. I appreciate the insights as well.
Thanks, George, for an awesome interview. I really enjoyed it. Now, as promised, here are some actionable insights that I learned from my conversation with George. George talks at length about the impact his travels had on him by seeing the wide range of differences out there and becoming more self-aware as he found himself in places all alone where he didn't even speak the language. He acquired a sense of empathy and a desire to engage with different perspectives. Even if you can't go on a sabbatical and travel the world, just getting out of your comfort zone, putting away your assumptions about others, and getting curious, as well as practicing more self-awareness, can do a lot to help you grow as a person. And this is totally true. I always say that the answer is not in the building. So if you are thinking about being an entrepreneur, definitely ask yourself, you know, where can I go to find more information about things? How can I get out of my comfort zone? How can I change my perspective? How can I get into the, you know, the same shoes as metaphorically that other people are walking in so that I can understand the challenges they have? George shares that he feels happier and freer than he's ever felt. Finding a passion project to engage in and working with people he loves to work with, what he cites as major factors. What's the lesson here? Find something you love to do and then find people you enjoy doing it with. I know, seems a little obvious, but a lot of people will put all that on hold for money, fame, fortune, and prestige. They'll basically sell out. And in the short run, that may be okay, but in the long run, you're just going to sit there and be miserable as you get more and more locked in. So, you know, as I always say, entrepreneurship's about freedom. You're not necessarily going to get rich, but if you want to have a free to be you and me kind of attitude and be free to create and work with the people you want to work with, then definitely it's something that to look into. So there you have it, the actionable insights that I learned from my interview with George. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.